So the next speaker is Fabian Heinrich Meissner from University of Göttingen, who will present finite temperature transport in 1D quantum lattice system from quantum magnets to ultra-cold atom bodies.
Yeah, I must say the last talk I understood very little, but the discussion was extremely entertaining. Let's see what's going to happen here. Oops. Okay, here we go. All right. Okay, perfect, very good. Thank you, and let me thank the organizers for inviting me to. Oh, there's nothing. That's not so great, yeah. But I know how to fix it. Very good. I properly rehearsed. I knew the fix. Yeah, so again, thanks to the organizers for having me here, and it's great to be back at KITP. We're switching gears now again completely, back to quantum magnetism and back to transport, spin and heat transport in this example. I'll be talking about the finite temperature properties of a set of very simple, simple-looking microscopic Hamiltonians, Heisenberg chains, and then Hubbard chains later on. And I'll try to connect it a little bit to the Magnon or Spinon or magnetic excitation thermal transport that you heard about in a couple of talks by Josh and Christian yesterday, and introduce you to the puzzling, bewildering world of integrable models that have all sorts of different types of transport in these systems. So we will see that if you look at spin transport and something as simple as a spin 1/2 XXE model, we can have a leading ballistic contribution, that is the Dudu weight. We can have a subleading contribution that is diffusive. We can have regimes that are actually diffusive, so no Dudu weight, and there can even be super diffusion. And all of that just by tuning model parameters. So it's bewilderingly rich. So I was more inspired by picking the topic of this talk by the name of the program, so spin and heat. So I figured, okay, I'll talk about spin and heat transport. The conference now also has topology. There won't be any topology in my talk, but let me just advertise. We also do a little bit of topology lately related to topological charge pumping. That is actually done in experiments with quantum gases in Munich and Kyoto. The game here is right now to look at breakdown of topological charge pumping due to interactions in bosonic and fermionic systems. And to connect a little bit to the conference, there's also spin pumps that can be done. These are still like, this is the first experiment, and in the future there's probably also going to be experiments on actual Z2 spin pumps and then later on interactive systems. So if you're interested in that, I'll be happy to chat about that later. All right, so here's my list of collaborators. It's essentially everybody, as you see. The research that I'm talking about will touch about things that we've worked on over the past 20 years, in all honesty. The most latest stuff that I'll actually talk about more extensively is, for the most part, a collaboration with Christoph Karasch, then also one story with Tomasz Prosen from Ljubljana, Joel at one point. And at the end, I might come to talk to phonons if I don't run out of time. So out of these people, let me just highlight maybe the students here who contributed. So Jan is a current graduate student in Göttingen. He's doing part of the transport, part of the phonon story. Florian graduated in Munich, now works for Airbus, but still is on a paper that we submitted last week. And then Stefan is here, who also contributed to a lot of things. He doesn't have an affiliation anymore because we've been postdocing in the US and found his destiny, and is a happy, lucky man now in industry. Okay, so as I said, the actual Hamiltonians here look very simple, spin 1/2 Heisenberg Hamiltonians. And these are in the class of one-dimensional Hamiltonians that are actually integrable. It means that there's typically, beyond energy, beyond magnetization, there's a set of local conserved quantities that are typically derived from algebraic arguments. And the game that we'll be discussing here is that if we have these conserved quantities, then they can in fact if they properly overlap this the spin or heat current, prevent the spin or heat current from decaying at all. And then you have a situation that would be an ideal finite temperature conductor, and it has this funny notion of a finite Drude weight and a completely divergent DC conductivity. The rule is not that any integrable model has this property. In fact, as we'll see, these systems can, in parameter regimes, be diffusive or ballistic or superdiffusive. But it happens so that if you want to search for this truly ballistic transport, so ballistic now meaning not mean free paths larger than the sample, but even infinitely long mean free paths in that language, then these are the interacting many body systems that you have to look at that do that. So I'll start out by talking about the a little bit of the experimental context. So all of this research goes back 20 years, but was highly influenced again by the experiments on quantum magnets that Christian talked about. There's also work from ultra-cold quantum gases already on this sort of stuff, but not yet in the linear response regime, but more in the non-equilibrium version that I'll talk about here. And then I'll give you an overview of what the current understanding is, or my summary of the current understanding for transport in anisotropic spin-one half chains. So it happens so that when I prepared the slides, I took them from a talk that I gave here at KATP last year, and within a year I had to change again the statement. So the community, nothing that I contributed personally, but the community is so active right now that the progress is actually crazy. Okay, so then one thing that has been bothering us a little bit is that these systems have these finite Drude weights, and I'll show you the definition in a second. We've annoyed the experimentalists with talking about them. And now one question that that we want to ultimately finish the story off with is to find a proposal where we can actually measure the damn thing in an experiment. And it turns out that that is probably actually very simple and can be done with not so much the spin systems, but much easier with Hubbard systems that are also integrable in optical lattice experiments. And I'll try to at least make it to this part. So what is actually keeping us busy in my group for most of the time right now is to add phonons to the story. Yeah, because we heard from Christian, phonons are obviously always there when you pump heat into the system. You typically first talk to phonons and then to the spin excitations. And the phonons are not accounted for, at least in what I'm talking about here. We're currently developing DMRG methods, or numerical methods, that can do time evolution for electron or spin phonon systems. And the hope is that maybe 4 years down the road, we'll be able to calculate spin conductivity and thermal conductivity. All right, so the mission statement is we'll have these microscopic models. We want finite temperature, so typically far away from any regimes of universal field theories or something. We want to get spin and heat transport from Kubo, so everything will be essentially a linear response, and we want to have the exact answer typically. So that's what the group of people that waste too much time on this obsession here are trying to do. All right, so let's get started with a little bit of an overview. So as I said, we're doing a linear response. Conductivity is then decomposed into a possible divergence with a true delta function at zero frequency and a regular part. This is this Drude weight contribution, and we'll be looking at finite temperature. And the best well-known example where this thing actually is non-zero is the thermal transport in spin-one half Heisenberg chains that can also be anisotropic. Yeah? So here's the operator, the current operator for this thing. And it turns out this is one of the first non-trivial conserved quantities, just happens to be so. And because of that, obviously, there's nothing at finite frequency, and all the weight is really in the thermal Drude weight. Yeah? So this has been known for long, and the quantity as such has also been calculated already in the 2002 and 3 by Andreas Klümper and Sakai here, using sort of beta ansatz methods. And that plot here shows this thermal Drude weight as a function of temperature and also combined with exact ionization data. And we know what it does. Yeah? So it's typically, if you're in this regime here, it starts out with a linear temperature dependence, has some maximum order of J, the coupling constant, then goes down with 1 over T squared. So that is completely, relatively simple and straightforward. Now let me cover a little bit of the experiments. The experiments that Christian talked about were done in 1D system, and strontium copper oxide is an example, then systems that realize ladders. So the ladders sit in these planes. These guys also have chains, but for reasons that I won't discuss, the ladders are relevant here. And then also the parent compounds for the cuprates. Yeah? And so Christian talked about that already. Let me show you thermal conductivity data again. And again, they have all these anisotropies along the 1D direction. There's this huge contribution here. this is along the ladder direction here, and then this is in plane here in the 2D materials. So in all of these materials, there is a sizable contribution for magnetic excitations. How to exactly extract that, whether the assumption of saying that kappa is the sum of lattice and magnon or magnetic contribution is correct, because there could also be drag terms, that is a difficult part when you look at the experiments, but at least the phenomenological behavior is always there. Yeah? If you do simple ways of extracting mean free paths, then they turn out to be order of microns even. Yeah? So this is true in all of these systems, so surprisingly long. Yeah? And that, of course, has triggered people to start thinking about this connection to these funny conservation laws in the models, at least for this material here. Okay, but staring at that, it's not obvious that this ballistic transport of a Heisenberg chain actually plays a role here, because the statement that scattering on phonon excitations is typically the most relevant at high temperatures is also true in the ladders. Yeah? So the experimental data just tells you whatever spin scattering you have, it's cut off by the coupling to the external degrees of freedom. So then there's one quantum gas experiment that was done in Emanuel Bloch's group. That is probably the one that clearly shows ballistic transport in a strongly interacting system, but not in linear response, but far from equilibrium. So what they did here is actually with bosons. So this is the Bose-Hubbard model. There's a local U here, is to put the system into a trap like this, and then open the trap and let all of the bosons expand into an empty lattice. Yeah, so it is a sort of clearly a non-equilibrium thing. There's inhomogeneous density profiles, but you can still ask, how different is this behavior of this expansion as I remove the trap, as I look at non-interacting systems, mildly interacting systems, and then very strongly interacting systems. The initial condition here is such that there is exactly one particle per site. And in the non-interacting case, that just means that you initialize somehow the momentum distribution to be completely flat. And if it's a free system, then fermions and bosons will just do exactly the same thing, because in the density, you can't distinguish what they're doing. And the key thing here is that, well, these free bosons expand ballistically. But now if you go to very strongly interacting bosons, then we know this maps to hardcore bosons. And in the spin language, it's just the XY model. So trivial model for quantum magnetism, but in the lab, actually strongly interacting bosons. Then you see, OK, they again have, even in the experimental data, practically the same density profiles. Now, and that tells you that strongly interacting bosons that, as we know, map to spinless fermions via Jordan and Wigner indeed propagate ballistically. Yeah? So this is non-equilibrium, but it's one example where this was where this ballistic transport due to integrability here in this strong U limit was shown, was seen in experiments. Okay, so yeah. Yeah.
Their energies are equal for hardcore bosons and fermions, but N of k is different.
N of k is very different. Very good point. But as I said, so if you worry about transport, you only worry about the number of particles that, you know, cross a plane. Huh? And you can't distinguish whether you have fermions, free fermions, or free bosons by looking at the density. So there's a follow-up paper here that looks at what the momentum distribution function does. And then, of course, you see bosons do different things. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But for transport, is you can't even tell, yeah, by just looking at the density. That's a good point. Yeah. All right. So now let me talk a little bit about the current understanding of transport in the spin 1/2 XXE model. Yeah? So now we make this a little bit richer. We allow for an anisotropy here. And now for spin transport, the spin current is only conserved exactly when delta is zero. Yeah? So this is just the XY or XX model here. If you go away from that, it's not conserved. So what we know here, just for the ground state physics, yeah, we have a latent liquid phase when delta is tuned from 0 to 1, and we have a gap phase here, an Ising-like phase when delta is large. And what we've known for many years from Chastity and Sutherland is that this sort of metal insulator transition is obviously captured by the zero temperature Drude-Wade that is non-zero here and then becomes zero here. And already that has a discontinuity. Now the question is what happens as we go to finite temperature. So the first relevant statements, I guess, go back to something that Leonard Lassmann mentioned, so work by Sotos and Preloshek, and Christian had this in his talk too. Here I'm first showing numerical data, and that will help us also to see a little bit how the different sorts of transport come about. So the left-hand side is a real-time calculation of current-current correlation functions that enter into doing Kubo. And you see four types of curves. So one is for delta equals zero. So delta equals zero, the current is observed, so you just have a straight line. So that necessarily has a Drude weight, which is just this number up to prefactors. So then you go to delta 0.5, the curve does a little bit of wiggling and then settles again into a constant. So again, apparently there is a Drude weight, a ballistic contribution that survives despite the short time dynamics. The isotropic point is very complicated. It's not clear to say from, at least from this data, where it's going to end up. So here we're still limited by the time scales. And if you go to delta equal 3, you see that essentially this oscillates a little bit and then goes close enough to zero. Yeah? So in this large regime, it turns actually out that the area under this curve, which is essentially the diffusion constant, is finite. So that is the case in which we will have diffusive dynamics. Here we clearly have a leading ballistic contribution, and at least from these calculations, that is time-dependent DMRG, we can't really tell for delta equal 1. Okay, but at least there is evidence of this Drude weight stuff here. You can also do exact diagonalization. This is historic data from 18 years ago for 20 sites, and for delta 0.5, you just calculate that thing brute force. It also extrapolates to something finite, and delta equal 1 is gives a small finite number, and then it's a matter of believing the extrapolation or not. So there was numerical evidence initially. There was also a beta ansatz calculation by Xenoph von Sotos. And then you would say, okay, integral model, beta ansatz sort of calculation, in this case, thermodynamic beta ansatz, shouldn't that be the answer? But it turned out that the beta ansatz community amongst themselves didn't agree on whether this result was correct. So Xenoph von also got finite Drude weights here in this 0.5 cases, and nothing for delta equal 1. And because of that doubt in the beta ansatz community, the question remained open for a long time. Yeah, very good point. Only the Z component. Yeah? The other components are also interesting, but not covered here. Yeah. Okay, so now let me give you an overview of what the current understanding is. So let me start actually in the most complicated regime, where I showed this numerical data that tells us there is a ballistic leading contribution. And the big question that people had is, why is that? Yeah? So I said at the beginning, you need conservation laws that protect the decay. If you think in terms of the actual current or the current correlation function. And there's a way of doing this formally. There's a lower bound to this thing that is essentially the sum over all the conservation laws, if you know them, and then an expression like that. Yeah? And so what you have to find is a conserved quantity that has a non-zero overlap onto the spin current. And the big puzzle until 2011 was that all the known quantities that the beta ansatz people knew about live in the wrong symmetry sector. Yeah? So the spin current is odd under spin inversion, and all the known ones until then are all even. So if I go exactly to zero magnetization, which is what this story is about, I have a lower bound that vanishes. Yeah? And I have no understanding where the Drude weight comes from. And that puzzle was solved by Tomasz Brosen in 2011-2013, and he discovered an until then unknown class of conserved quantities that are quasi-local. They have the right symmetry, and then was able to show that indeed this has to be a finite Drude weight in this particular regime, and found this lower bound. Yeah, so this is then formally the answer. Also sort of the revolution, the beta ansatz community, that they missed an infinite set of conserved quantities that they didn't know about. Well, this is a judgmental statement. I mean, they were just not known. Okay, so then at least in this logic, we sort of know which guys are responsible. But then it's not quite as satisfactory as you would think, because the lower bound that Tomasz got out of this inequality here, it's actually only a lower bound, because there's no proof that the set of conserved quantities is complete, has a fractal structure. Yeah? So there's a red line that is just one of these, what is happening? One of these conserved quantities. Let me switch to this pointer here. And then the upper line includes all the ones that are known. And you see, if I go to the non-interacting point, then I sit up here and I turn on delta a little bit, I jump down. You know, so immediately a lot of stuff goes away, and then I have all these little peaks here. And then you think, okay, this is sort of weird because the zero temperature curve looks like this. It's smooth, it has a discontinuity here, but now I turn on temperature and I even go to infinite temperature and I distill out this fractal structure. Yeah? So the mathematicians, sort of the mathematical minded people at that point were happy. They said, okay, I have all the math here, it seems okay, I can't prove completeness, but I see no mistake in the calculation. The physicist has to say, okay, something is not okay yet. And that is the thing that was figured out only, I think, in full glory only 2 months ago by Sarang, Gopalakrishnan, and Romain Vasseur, and Agarwal and Ver. The argument is relatively simple to say. This is the leading contribution here. And if you see that weight jumps around as you tune this parameter, then the weight has to go somewhere because there's an optical sum rule that actually has to be smooth. It's just the kinetic energy. Yeah? So if weight goes away from the Drude weight, well, it has no other way as going to very low frequency. And in fact, one can show that it also has to be super diffusive. So the very surprising new thing is that this picture that I drew is actually not fully complete, but almost everywhere, for almost all of these values of delta, there's a super diffusive correction that means that this blue curve also diverges. Yeah? So a leading divergence and a subleading divergence. And that was really, I think this is not foreseen at all, but it's sort of a consequence out of this fractal structure. There are some other points where there's a diffusive contribution that depends sensitively to the structure of the excitations that play a role here. Okay, so I hope you got the idea that this is sort of exotic behavior. And there's probably no other model, not even a model known, where the situation is similarly complicated. So you take the simplest thing that we have, and it looks terribly rich already. Yes?
Can you explain why those spikes happen at the depth?
Well, no. It has to, so you can think in terms of the string excitations in the beta ansatz. So there's bound states and they have varying lengths. And in essence, it has to do with the fact that that they have finite lengths at certain points. And if you go a little bit away from them, they become infinitely long. Yeah? So that's a weird property of these excitations. Yeah? So you have to dig deep into these properties. And no, I would say there's no actual understanding. Yeah? It just comes out of working with the known set of excitations that I have in the beta ansatz, Takahashi's hypothesis, string hypothesis. If you do that in calculations that are different from the one that I show, that give the same result, then you understand that it has to do with a length scale that still exists even at infinite temperature.
And this is all pure, right? There's nothing, no disorder.
No disorder, it's all pure. No? Oh, yeah, exactly. But also fascinating. So now let's go to the other regime, very large delta. And then here it turns out, as I indicated in this one figure at the beginning, that there's no Drude weight. This is not a rigorous statement, but all the analytics and numerics that we have points to that. So it's just purely well-behaved spin conductor, even though we have an integrable model and diffusive. And for the Heisenberg point, all the most recent work points to super diffusion again, and no subleading correction, so no Drude weight, sorry, no leading Drude weight contribution, but super diffusion. No? So you see it's very rich, but the one point that I want you to take away from that is essentially this blue statement here. No? So forget about everything in this complicated regime, but if you concentrate on this regime here and remember that the thermal conductivity is strictly ballistic everywhere in this model, then you have the interesting situation that even though in principle everything is carried by the same type of excitations, you have dissipation and heat. Dissipation is heat transport, but diffusive spin transport. Yeah, and that is valid at any temperature. So it's totally different from a Fermi liquid, totally different from a Luttinger liquid. And the goal of what I'm going to show you next is how to find an experiment where you can actually show that this is correct. I mean, we know it from all the results, but we want to have an experiment to demonstrate that. And for that, we go back to and do something much simpler than calculating complicated Kubo. We do the equivalent by just hitting the system somewhere with a small perturbation. and then sort of remember what Einstein relations are that relate the conductivity typically to the diffusion constant, but they can also be written in a more general form to account for all sorts of types of limits, so ballistic limit, super diffusive, and diffusion. So in principle, the bits of this, don't quit on me, the bits of this, this wave packet here is a double time integral over the current correlation function, and this form is exactly correct at infinite temperature. And you see, if the first integral is convergent, that's a diffusive case, then I pick up one more time from the second integral, and that's the typical version that you know from the Einstein relation, namely that the diffusion constant is proportional to the DC conductivity divided by susceptibility. But it also has the other limits. Yeah? So if this becomes a constant at long times, so a non-zero constant, then that's the Drude weight, and I have two time integrations, so I find, okay, the wave packet spreads ballistically with T squared, and the prefactor is just the Drude weight. Yeah, and that is the crucial insight, yeah? That simply by hitting the system with a local small perturbation, we can look at what this Witz does, and then determine whether it's diffusive or not. It's an obvious statement, but we can also read off the Drude weight. Okay, so here's just an illustration of that. That's a numerical calculation. This is the energy density is plotted here. The width is plotted here, so this goes properly with T squared in this large delta regime. That's spin density, and it crosses over from an initial ballistic expansion to something that is properly diffusive. And the numbers here match up to what you would expect from exact results for the Drude weight. So the point is not so much that this works. The point is actually what are the timescales to see a large difference, and that is order of 10 in units of 1 over the coupling constant here. Yeah? So in quantum magnets, that's probably not so easy to do. There's ways of doing time-resolved experiments with quantum magnets as well, but then you still have phonons and other complications, but you can turn to quantum gases. Now, quantum gases, something went wrong here. I thought I had a second slide. Yeah, so quantum gases now can realize quantum magnets, but only typically out of a Hubbard model in the strong U over Hopping limit. Yeah? And to illustrate that, I'm showing you the thermal Drude weight for the 1D Hubbard model that is also integrable, that is also a ballistic thermal conductor, as a function of temperature. Yeah? So this is a log scale. And you see it has a double peak structure at large U. That is the regime that comes from spin excitations, and it compares exactly to the known spin Drude weight for the Heisenberg model. And then at high temperatures, I have a second peak, and that's where charge excitations dominate. Yeah? So the idea is, okay, we don't worry about cooling down a quantum gas, which is notoriously difficult with fermions, but we go to fairly high temperature scales, practically infinite temperature for the spin subsystem, and then try to see this. The problem is, of course, there's no way of measuring local kinetic energy yet. Yeah? So this doesn't work, but it gives you the idea of why we turn to the Hubbard model and not go away from spin systems. Yeah, and then we were actually sitting in Natal, and I showed this to Tomas, and he said, okay, then let's forget about thermal transport. Let's play a little twist. Let's imbalance the system. If I imbalance the system, then we know exactly from old papers by Xenophon that then spin transport has to become ballistic again. It's the same story that happens in the Heisenberg model. I didn't tell you that, but that's true. We know that. While if I stay at half filling, the charge will remain diffusive, or in fact, it's super diffusive. That is again illustrated here. You see, okay, the spin is much faster and actually has an exponent of the width that is practically 2, and charge has a running exponent that goes to somewhere 1, which would be diffusion, or somewhere in between. Yeah? So here we can't really numerically distinguish between super diffusion or diffusion yet. The quantum gas experiments can push it further by an order of magnitude of 2 or 3, even in time. And in fact, all that they need to do is hit a hole somewhere in a spin imbalance system and measure spin and charge density separately. And this is a figure that I took from a preprint this year where they essentially did that, but they're trying to see spin charge separation, so slightly different regime. But in principle, all the technology is there. And then one would have a measurement of this coexistence of a ballistic channel and a diffusive or super diffusive channel in the same model, and the means of measuring the Drude wages from this prefactor here.
Is the simple intuition of different propagations when I charge?
Well, it's the same logic as before. I mean, we can simply, we know that the spin current overlaps with a set of conserved quantities if I spin imbalance the system. That's also true if I go to the Heisenberg limit, you know? Because I break spin inversion symmetry, and then it already overlaps with all the even charges that one knew before.
It's still kind of, this is like a mathematical.
It's a mathematical statement. Yeah. So that is absolutely true, and I totally agree. So we're at the stage where we now have. Where we now believe that we have the right numbers or statements. Now we have to worry about what's the physics. So why is the fractal there, and how do we put this into words? And of course, there's people who worked on this in the past years, the whole gang of people doing generalized hydrodynamics, who are deeper into understanding the excitations in this integrable models, and Serang and Romain may be able to give an answer already, but I don't have an intuitive picture yet.
Yeah,
but not, no, sorry, very good point, but not at infinite temperature.
Okay.
This is infinite temperature.
I'm surprised
about the spin and heat. Yeah, again, it's a peak.
By the same string excitation.
Yeah, yeah, but again, it's a peculiar property of integrable models, and you need to fine-tune everything there. So your intuition comes from low-energy theories. They don't usually know whether they describe an integrable microscopic model, and that's why I had said microscopic model at the beginning, or whether they are tuned away into another gapless phase that describes a gapless phase of a non-integrable model. Right? And I didn't show you that. All the results that we have for non-integrable models point to regular diffusion if I perturb strongly enough. Yeah? So there the low-energy theory needs to include Umklapp scattering that was done by Jesko Zirka, and that gives the generic situation that you get diffusion, so all is fine again. Yeah? It's really only these fine-tuned points. So I think I'm out of time, so let me just tell you that we're also doing phonons to get closer back to quantum magnetism, but I'll skip that, and stop probably here with the summary. Okay, thank you for your attention.
But maybe we can continue a discussion. Any question?
Oh. So you mentioned that in the ballistic phase, you have this sort of subdiffusive corrections that are subleading corresponding to the ballistic part.
Yeah.
But then when I tune to the isotropic point that is just super diffusive, can I think of that as somehow coming from these subleading corrections?
Well, I think the easiest way to understand why something happens at the isotropic point is to look at, to approach it from this, to approach it from the large delta limit. Yeah? So there it's diffusive, and if you follow the diffusion constant, you see it diverges as you go to delta equal 1. Yeah, so it starts to know that it eventually wants to be at Drude weight, but at that point it's just a weaker divergence. Now, to exactly understand that as you go back and forth here between values of delta that differ by just an epsilon and have diffusive versus super diffusive corrections, that can only be extracted out of the fact that you have the fractal. So the fractal forces you to accept that weight has to go somewhere, and then it has to be super diffusive if it is pushed to low frequencies, and if you have a large Drude weight, essentially it can be diffusive if you wish.
Yeah. More questions?
Actually, it's not a question, but maybe asking to repeat something that, the questions prevented you from making the statement, I guess. So, in the for spin models, I understand. Then the statement is that the spin transport and energy transport are different.
Yeah.
One may be ballistic, another is diffusive. And then you told that in cold atoms you can play somehow with a particle density and spin, and I get lost.
Yeah, okay. So
if you can repeat basically.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. So the game is, the point is, I have two choices. Either I do the spin model. Yeah, I need to really quantum simulate the spin model, but the way that is done, at least a typical Heisenberg model, would be that you take an underlying Hubbard model and go into the large U-Wood Hopping regime in the quantum gases. But then, you know, the typical energy scales become even smaller. They go down with 1/U, and cooling fermions is difficult. So going for the model that is that I talked about at the beginning is more difficult experimentally. But then the Hubbard model is also an integrable model. Yeah? And it has an SC2 symmetry and the pseudo-SC2 symmetry, SC2 symmetry in the spin sector. So you expect it to behave exactly for spin transport like the Heisenberg chain. Yeah? But it has three channels. Yeah? So it has spin, charge, and heat. So heat is again protected by a conservation law that is known for long, so that is always ballistic. That one we can't measure because then you would have to measure how the local energy density spreads out. Yeah? And there's no way yet to measure the local kinetic energy. So that's why we can't go with heat, but we can play a trick and stay at half filling where we know that there is no ballistic charge transport. That's again known. But the spin transport can be made ballistic by spin imbalancing the system. That's the trick. And then these two channels behave differently.
Yeah. Each iteration iterator, you look at, and you can play some correlation functions at least.
Yeah. No, the
so what is the iterator?
No, the relevant correlation. Yeah. So the what I showed is in the numerics is two ways. So either you brute force calculate current correlation functions. So in the Hubbard model, you have a spin current, charge current, and a thermal current correlation function. And the behavior is, as I said, yeah, up to the point that it's numerics. Yeah? But some of these statements are exact, yeah, because you know the conservation laws that make thermal transport ballistic. Or, just to answer that, or in the simple-minded stuff that we are proposing to the experimentalists, you only have to measure densities. Yeah? You only measure densities because the way that a density perturbation spreads out also tells you exactly whether the system is ballistic, diffusive, or not. No, this is just Einstein relations.
Particle density,
spin density, and heat density. So that is that's of course a subtle point. Yeah? But what is actually done is this. I mean, you write down you define a local energy density, yeah, which is essentially everything but the sums. Yeah? And then from a continuity equation, you derive the form of the energy current operator. And then. So it's sort of. It's sort of for free fermions, you know, it's a hopping term over two sides, and then there's a term that involves U times the charge current, that's how it looks like. And since you know what energy density you derived it from, then you also know what the energy density is that you have to measure when you perturb it a little bit. Yeah? So that's consistent. But the question of what is heat versus energy, that's a different story, yeah? That we can also talk about. Yeah.
I have a question to this picture with fractal peaks.
How
robust is this picture with respect to the model? So it's a kind of spherical horse in vacuum, but if you introduce some...
Well, I mean, to be honest, in principle, we would say, no, it's not robust at all. Now, if you perturb this and make the system non-integrable, if you add a staggered magnetic field, if you add a coupling that goes over distance larger than one, then it becomes non-integrable, then this whole thing is gone.
Okay, yeah? So then we will have a normal diffusion.
Even normal diffusion, not even a Drude wave. Yeah? So why do we care about this? I mean, you could say this is just a model game. Well, just because it's the simplest Hamiltonian that we have. That's the reason. Yeah? And if it was just some Hamiltonian that people write down for fun to solve it, then well, maybe not so many people would care about. But it's in the most basic one.
Questions? Then you are ready for drinks. So Rembert allowed me to announce the next event is a party. Thank you.